Should have gone into public office, one of the loafers said. Too dirty, George told him. They could sense the change that most of us were only suspecting. These weren't the same bunch of weak knees from a nuthouse that they'd watched take their insults on the dock this morning. They didn't exactly apologize to the girl for the things they'd said, but when they asked to see the fish she'd caught, they were just as polite as pie. And when McMurphy and the captain came back out of the bait shop, we all shared a beer together before we drove away. It was late when we got back to the hospital. The girl was sleeping against Billy's chest, and when she raised up, his arm had gone dead, holding her all that way in such an awkward position, and she rubbed it for him. He told her if he had any of his weekends free, he'd ask her for a date, and she said she could come to visit in 2 weeks if he'd tell her what time, and Billy looked at McMurphy for an answer. McMurphy put his arms around both of their shoulders and said, "Let's make it 2 o'clock on the nose." "Saturday afternoon?" she asked. He winked at Billy and squeezed the girl's head in the crook of his arm. "No, 2 o'clock Saturday night. Slip up and knock on that same window you was at this morning. I'll talk the night aide into letting you in." She giggled and nodded. "You damned McMurphy," she said. Some of the acutes on the ward were still up, standing around the latrine to see if we'd been drowned or not. They watched us march into the hall, blood-speckled, sunburned, stinking of beer and fish, toting our salmon like we were conquering heroes. The doctor asked if they'd like to come out and look at his halibut in the back of his car, and we all started back out except McMurphy. He said he guessed he was pretty shot and thought he'd hit the hay. When he was gone, one of the acutes who hadn't made the trip asked how come McMurphy looked so beat and worn out, where the rest of us looked red-cheeked and still full of excitement. Harding passed it off as nothing more than the loss of his suntan. You'll recall McMurphy came in full steam from a rigorous life outdoors on a work farm, ruddy of face and abloom with physical health. We've simply been witness to the fading of his magnificent psychopathic suntan, that's all. Today he did spend some exhausting hours, in the dimness of the boat cabin, incidentally, while we were out in the elements soaking up the vitamin D. Of course, that may have exhausted him to some extent, those rigors down below, but think of it, friends. As for myself, I believe I could have done with a little less vitamin D and a little more of his kind of exhaustion, especially with little Candy as a taskmaster. Am I wrong? I didn't say so, but I was wondering if maybe he wasn't wrong. I'd noticed McMurphy's exhaustion earlier, on the trip home, after he'd insisted on driving past the place where he'd lived once. We'd just shared the last beer and slung the empty can out the window at a stop sign and were just leaning back to get the feel of the day, swimming in that kind of tasty drowsiness that comes over you after a day of going hard at something you enjoy doing, half sunburned and half drunk and keeping awake only because you wanted to savor the taste as long as you could. I noticed vaguely that I was getting so's I could see some good in the life around me. McMurphy was teaching me. I was feeling better than I'd remembered feeling since I was a kid, when everything was good and the land was still singing kids' poetry to me. We drove back inland instead of the coast to go through this town McMurphy'd lived in, the most he'd ever lived in one place. Down the face of the Cascade Hill, thinking we were lost till we came to a town covered a space about twice the size of the hospital ground. A gritty wind had blown out the sun on the street where he stopped.